Welcome to the New Beat Podcast.
Today we're talking to guitarist Ben Holt and vocalist Leo Lee.
The song that you're hearing is called Heart and Sorrow, and they wrote it together. Ben is on guitar and Lee is singing.
Today we talk a lot about cultural challenges. Both of them moved to the States to go to school for jazz from countries outside the United States. Ben is from Canada, Lee is from Taiwan. And we talk about a lot of the challenges they faced, especially with her, with not speaking the language the way that we speak it, a lot faster and colloquial. We talk about life lessons, musician etiquette, some poutine. We even get a couple of Canadian sorries in there.
About? Yep. Also, check us out on YouTube if you want to watch us. And we'll put links to Ben and Lee's social media and their music on our website and also in the YouTube description box. All right, here we go.
But I really thought that I could make it to the gym. I just had to pull over and get Whataburger. So my workout was 20 minutes long.
Wait. You got Whataburger on the way to the gym.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
You were so fat.
I can't believe it,
Ben. Wow.
Man, I can't work out on an empty stomach. Okay. But yeah, I'm fat. It's true.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to the New Beat Podcast. I'm Elise.
And I'm Matt. And today we have Ben Holt and Leo Lee. Ben is a guitar player. And Lee is a vocalist. We met both these guys through UNT. Ben is a recent graduate of the master's program in jazz at UNT. And Lee is still in the master's program. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, nice. Mm-hmm. So let's see. These guys are just working all over the place, right? I think Lee's focusing on school. And Ben's trying to hustle and play guitar in as many different context as possible.
That's what's been happening.
Yep. And he also teaches.
He teaches some.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's dive into it. And what I thought we could do, because I'm from Minnesota and Ben is Canadian.
Yes.
So we're gonna determine once and for all who is the superior in intelligence of the northern lands. So this is a game that I came up with, and I haven't practiced. I just thought of this on the drive. So what we're going to do is winter-themed words. So I'm going to say a winter-themed word, like ice, and then you have to come up with a word that starts with the second letter of that word. So C, so like Christmas.
Okay.
And I'd have to come up with a word that starts with H.
This is intense.
Yeah, I know. It's a warm-up game. All right. So I'm going to start with earmuff.
Oh, no.
You have one phone a friend. You can phone Lee.
So Kaylee, I'm calling you in right now.
Already?
Winter word that starts with an A? Is that where we're at?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Earmuff. And then...
apple pie?
Yeah, that's...
That's
yeah.
A winter thing. Yeah. I think so.
So, P. Puffy coat.
You, oh man, that's way too hard. You,
wow.
I did that on purpose.
Okay, underwear long.
That's good. And North Pole.
Overcoat.
Is oh, crap.
Overcoat. Yeah, but they probably have those in Canada.
What the hell? V. Vixen, the reindeer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Thinking
ice.
The box here.
Ice.
Nice.
Christmas.
Holiday.
Ice is...
Ontario is in the province because it's wintry. It's cold. Right?
Yeah, in winter. Okay. North.
I already said North Pole. Does that count?
Oh, yeah. Okay. New Year's?
Oh, okay. Evergreen.
Because
they don't lose their leaves.
That's true.
Anyone who's listening from the southern hemisphere?
They're these things. Trees.
B.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know. I
the
mean,
Canadian.
Yeah.
Stumped them.
Yeah, okay.
Stumped them.
Skol Vikes.
Right. Awesome. So let's get into what your focuses are, your projects you're working on now. What do you guys got going on?
All right. Well, we did spend some time in the studio recently, and we recorded two tunes, and mine was released, Persistence, a few weeks ago, and Lee's tune, which we wrote together, is going to be released pretty soon. That's what we get going on. It was good to get that out. I think it was two weeks ago that I put that out there.
What finally motivated you to sit down and write a song and record a single?
Well, I mean, it's time. That's the only motivation was that it's time. Like I met, this is the kind of thing that I want to do. So, you know, why wait for anything? You know, I booked the session before I had written the music, and I set the intention. I'm going to do this thing. And, you know, I wrote a bunch of tunes, and I booked a gig, and we played a bunch of them, and then went in the studio and recorded two of them. Just to get the ball rolling, you know, and
yeah.
Yeah.
Persistence. Is that the one that you just released?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Awesome. And then there was another one that was Your Address. Is that right?
No. I mean, okay. So we, it was like, I didn't have a title. It was like,
oh,
316 Fries, one that I put on it, and we played the gig, and I called that on the gig, and I was thinking, that's just a terrible name.
I liked that name. That's what really? I remember. I like it too.
Yeah, that's good.
Now that you released it.
Oh, man. Why did you tell me this?
Did you rename it?
Yeah, I renamed it. Persistence, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And the song is Flying?
Yeah, the other one was Flying, yeah.
Yeah.
Just name that one 317 Fry.
It's like your neighbors.
It's like a landmark of Denton. Fry Street is... like where you do the Fry Street crawl,
but it's almost too close to home. Like I see that billboard all the time. It's like 3-1. It's like naming your tune McDonald's or something.
But then you know, like people across the world, they're like, "Oh, what is Fry Street?" And they're like, "Oh, Ben Holt. He's from this little town in Texas."
I guess I'm not thinking that big. Denton. Maybe I should be. So we did that tune, and we recorded in the same session. We did a tune that Lee and I had written together, and that's gonna come out pretty soon.
Yeah. Yay. How we wrote the tune is very interesting. I did the lyrics, and the first part is like scatting, and the reason why I named the song Flying is because the first two scat syllables I choose, it sounds like flying in Chinese, which is fei'a.
Fei'a.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how I named the song, and then later when I wrote the lyrics, I was just thinking about there's like a very famous article in Chinese world. The author is Xu Zhimo. The article is all about talking just human being want to be free, and it's like he just like used the bird flying image in the article.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
Flying. Nice. So I've recorded a song with you guys before.
That's right.
Is this the same one, or is this
it's a different one?
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same concept for the project. I mean, like, there's something that we wanna.
We have like a Chinese jazz project.
Okay.
This is one like two songs in that project.
Yeah. So last year we recorded a tune that was it was a Chinese poem from the Song Dynasty.
Yeah.
We set to like a sort of a jazz waltz that we wrote.
Yeah. That one we just took the. You know, just the poem.
Lyrics, yeah,
we didn't do any like editing of the lyrics.
Oh,
we just
right.
put it, and then we put the music on.
Right, we wrote the music, and then
we wrote the melody
and the chords.
Yeah. And this one is like original
lyrics. Yeah.
I think it's fantastic that you take Chinese poetry, and an American art form, jazz, and combine them. I think that's really great because I can't think of any jazz Chinese artists. Are there a lot?
No, it's yeah,
very few.
It's very few, and that's why I'm here because I want to learn like authentic jazz. That's why I come to United States.
How did you?
So Lee is from Taiwan,
originally,
and came here to go to school for jazz. Yeah. Right?
What sparked your curiosity for jazz? Why did you want to study it?
But it's just because I really, really into this music. I was majoring in Chinese literature when I was doing my undergrad, and I just started gigging as a jazz vocalist. I just sing a lot of jazz standards then. And then I just feel like, oh, this music is so cool because I can totally feel like the hard part of like the racism and all the like history and the spiritual thing in happening in the music. So I'm just like, this is so cool and I want to learn this. And then I just like gigging a lot in Taiwan, and then many of my friends that we like gigging together or have a band, we just like, they have like a study abroad project. They were like all talking about like, hey, I want to study in Europe, I want to study in America. And I was like, yeah, maybe I can try that. And also I'm afraid of like being like the last person. I'm just afraid of not improving my skill compared to all my like colleagues. Coworkers.
That's right.
Yeah, my band members. So I just started this project. So I have been to like multiple different schools, like Amsterdam Conservatory, Brussels Conservatory, and also in America, in UNT, Queens College, and Manhattan Music School. I'm just apply like all of them, and I've been there for live audition.
I really appreciate that you are so driven and you came across the world to study jazz. That's a really neat story. Yeah, you're just living in a different country. And I guess what's your perspective then on picking up and moving your life to a completely different part of the world?
It's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like this is home or you feel kind of displaced?
This is my third year in Denton, Texas, and
Aiden.
Yeah. To be honest, I feel like it's very different from where I'm from, especially like food and the language and the culture. Yeah. And
you miss those noodles, right?
Noodles and hot pot. Yeah.
What's hot pot?
Hot pot is just like a pot with like a soup, and you just dip all the different ingredients in, and then you eat it.
You don't know hot pot?
That sounds so good.
Oh my gosh, it's like,
it's like a hot dish.
Right.
Let's go sometime. Yeah. We'll go in Carrollton is where we can do
fantastic.
It.
Fantastic.
Really?
Awesome. Yeah, it's awesome.
Wow.
It's like a giant pot, and it's in the table, and it's really hot, and you put the food in, and just like pick it out and eat it. It's so good.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun. So it's like family style.
Yeah.
You just grab what you want from the pot.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome.
My gosh, that's amazing.
That's awesome.
And they cut the meat really thin so it cooks in the pot.
Ooh.
Oh, really? It's like you pick the ingredients out or something?
Well, you order the ingredients and it comes in this big plate of ingredients and you just throw them in as you wish.
What?
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, in Carrollton, we got to go sometime.
Let's do it. Let's go after this. No, they're probably closed. Yeah. That's really great. So, I was looking at some of the videos of you back home and doing jazz gigs. And it's amazing the reception that you have. You have quite a following out there. What is it like performing to an audience that doesn't live in America and have the jazz tradition all around them? You know what I mean?
I think most of the people, they're just there. First, it's like they want to, you know, feel fancy about their life probably. Mm. And then most of the Chinese-speaking people in Taiwan are very like open for fresh stuff and, you know, new sounding stuff. So we have like the jazzing and also like indie music. It's just very like a westernized and like American style. Yeah. And but I think there's some problem of singing jazz. It's because the language that people cannot really like understand the lyrics that, you know, the first time that they ever sing, that they ever hear it, you know, live. And then you just like, so most of the time, if I sing like a cooperation gig, I only sing songs that is really, really, you know, popular in our world. It's like Fly Me to the Moon, Dream a Little Dream of Me, you know, songs like that.
Yeah, and people can know them so they can understand them a little better.
One of my like a little goal in my mind whenever I do those kind of gig was like I would pick up like, you know, a couple songs and then put it in my set list. And after I do a whole bunch of like Dream a Little Dream of Me, this kind of popular song, and I put some of like, you know, jazz standards that doesn't really, you know, not that famous. And I'm trying to introduce more songs to like people, and I just wish that maybe someday they will like, oh, actually I hear this before, you know.
That's so cool.
Yeah, trick them into educating them.
Yeah, like consciousness.
Yeah. I didn't know there was lyrics in jazz till just now.
Okay, yeah, Ben's a guitar player, so it's all about him, and changes are God.
That's right.
That's I love that. Lee, that's amazing. You're getting to bring a genre of music to an audience for the first time.
Well, we're going to go to Taiwan next month.
Yeah.
Cool. Are you going to play? Or are you going to be a tourist?
Yeah, we have like... I already booked 4 gigs in Taiwan.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, and he will be on 3, I think.
Whatever.
I'm going to introduce this Canadian.
Well, it's the band is UNT alumni, so it's going to be all UNT alumni. We already have the band booked and the rehearsal
booked.
Who else
is playing on it?
It's all like Taiwanese who have been to UNT to study jazz or like music.
I don't know any of them.
Yeah, okay. It's like it's all my friend Li Chenyu, Xiao Li, Li Shijun is another guitarist. Because I want like all the jazz alumni, so our instrumentation is like 2 guitars and bass and drums, vocal and saxophone.
That's awesome. Are you going to be recording? Can you please record them?
Yeah, I think we will.
Yeah. So we're going to try and play as much of our original music as we can.
Nice.
Yeah. We will definitely do Persistence and Flying.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yay. Can I come?
Yeah.
When are you going?
yeah, you can come. Yeah.
You guys going for Christmas, did you say?
For Christmas. So the 19th of December to the 12th of January.
And are you going
to
stay with your family?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to meet at least parents.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
What do her parents think of you?
Well, apparently her dad is going to make sure that I'm physically fit. So he's going to apparently he works out twice a day, so he's going to make sure I go with him. So yeah. I'm training for that right now.
Yes.
No more eating Whataburger before you go to the gym.
What are you going to do?
Right before this podcast he said, "Yeah, I ate some Whataburger before I went to work out."
I went to the gym this morning and I couldn't make it to the gym without getting hungry, so I stopped at Whataburger on the way.
Oh, nice.
That's amazing. I'm picturing like you get there and there's an obstacle course. He's like, "All right, son, you must prove to me your strength."
Right.
And Lee's at the end.
But from what I hear, it's the morning is like an outdoor thing. Like apparently, he likes to climb a mountain. Well, I don't know what that means. But
you go climb
a
mountain,
right? You know what a mountain is, right?
Like I guess, but not like rock climbing. Yeah, like run up a hill, a giant hill, and then like we're in later in the day, go to the gym and lift weights. So
how did you two meet?
How?
We met in the library at UNT.
Yes!
I asked her about her research paper, and one thing led to another.
Yeah, and then we were just like...
Can I tell it? Why don't I tell it?
What do you want to say?
Well, so I'm just going to tell it, because it's kind of funny. So
don't leave out any of the gory details.
All right. So
don't say the name.
So, well, Lee and I, you know, we went... Mark Turner was playing in Fort Worth, and a friend of ours... Had a you know, a big car, and he was driving a bunch of people to Fort Worth to see the show. So we went. She sat in the front, and I sat in the back. We didn't speak at all.
He laughed. There.
And then I ditched them to hang out with some cooler friends, you know.
We're not cool enough.
And then the next day, or a few days later, maybe a week later, I guess it was, I met her in the library, and I asked her, you know, what are you working on? You know, research paper for Dr. Murphy. So that's what we're all working on all the time.
Right, of course.
And
hi, Dr. Murphy.
And we talked about it. We had a really great conversation that went really deep, really quick. And then I left the library. Yeah, right. And then I texted her. I was like, "Hey, well, I'm gonna go to Fry Street to get some food. Do you want to come with me?" You know, I wasn't going to Fry Street, but I texted her that. She said, like,
"No."
Yeah.
Why would I?
Yeah, right. Basically, that was the deal. So
nice.
So I went home and I was like getting in bed. It's like super early. It was like 9 o'clock, and I'm like getting in bed. And then an hour later, she texted me. She said, "You know what? I changed my mind. Are you still down there?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm still down there."
That's strategy.
Get up.
He's like, nah. He's got to work for it.
She played hard to get. And then I got up, got dressed really quick, got on my bike, and flew across campus and met her there. And like, I was coming from the opposite direction of Fry Street when I met her, so she could have busted me for that. There, and then we talked for a while over some food, and I tried to convince her to have a frozen margarita. She was not having it. And then that was that.
The reason why I changed my mind was just because I think, you know, it's my first semester here, and I don't know like many people, and I really want to shed my English skills. Yeah, my English chops. So
you're like, he's ugly as hell, but at least I can practice my English.
That's still her excuse to stay with me too. It's like I can practice English for a little while longer. Yeah, I guess.
No, I just feel like this guy is like speaking so fast, I couldn't really understand him at all.
Yeah.
And what was
That's true for the rest of us too, though.
Yeah, that's what they say. That's what they say.
Well, no one can understand them. No.
No, that's what I lived with them two Colombians when I earlier on when I was at UNT, and they said the same thing. They thought it was a real challenge to, you know, they were like taking on like, yeah, this is my challenge to live with Ben and learn English. But then when they realized that not everyone spoke that quickly.
I never thought that, Ben. I
appreciate that.
I feel like you're on my level.
So I'm normal, am I? Is that...
You're not normal, but I'm not normal either.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So we understand each other.
Right, yeah. It's my first time ever to date a you know, Western guy.
A white boy.
Yeah, and you know, like dating in our culture is all about, you know, marriage.
Yeah.
Even though like younger generation, they would be a little bit like Americanized, but most of the time people will, you know, even like blame people who's been like a player, even though he's just like, you know, hanging out with girls and yeah. So
that wasn't me.
So I was like worry about if he's not like, you know, serious about this relationship. And I remember I asked you many times, like, are you serious? Do you really want to do this?
Trying to.
I do.
And then he was like trying to keep everything cool. So I don't really know, like, you know, how does this guy, like, you know, what does this guy really want? So not until I met his awesome parents. Here,
hey,
yeah,
shouts out mom and dad.
Best part of Ben
pulling through,
mom and dad,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're just so genuine, and I just feel like, you know,
now Lee's cool. Master's recital is next semester, and her parents are going to come from Taiwan. And we thought, well, if they're going to be here, why don't we bring my parents so they're all going to be here to check out the recital?
Nice,
yeah, go get four frozen margaritas together.
Yeah, that's right.
Be six at least.
So, how's your master's recital planning going?
My recital,
yeah. You have kind of an easy semester, do you, to kind of work on that?
Or? Next semester.
Oh, yeah. Next semester.
Yeah.
I think I'll still take some more classes, courses.
Well, we played a couple of the tunes that you want to play a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to, like, play some of my, you know, favorite songs of all time, like Yellow Jacket song, and probably some of from Bobby McFerrin. Bobby McFerrin has always been my... super idol.
Nice.
Yeah. So
that's cool.
And
so,
you don't have
like a set list set out yet. You don't have it.
Not yet. Yeah.
You do that the day before.
Of course.
You gotta feel
it's college
feel
after all.
Yeah, right.
That's great. So Ben, how did you? You know, you're both international students. How did you want to come to UNT?
Well, mine wasn't near as intense as Lee.
Right. Ben is from Nova Scotia,
yeah.
Canada.
Hey, it's a foreign land up there.
I mean, for me, it was almost like it was a given, you know, from where I'm coming from. People that go to the school that I went to, St. Francis Xavier in Nova Scotia, a lot of the faculty, you know, they went to UNT. And Fred Hamilton taught at St. FX, or St. Francis Xavier, back in the 80s. So we all knew about UNT and kind of... We were sort of pushed in that, not pushed, but like we were shown the path to get there. And that program was based on the UNT program. So, you know, as soon as I knew that it was a thing, I wanted to do it, you know. So,
nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to move to Texas.
Yeah, right.
From Canada.
Yeah. Which is nothing compared to Taiwan from you know, but no, it was a big, it was a big change. But the thing about it here is it's so amazing, the opportunities to play. Like it's,
yeah, you were telling me about that. It's like even just having gigs.
Even just having gigs, man. If you're living in Halifax, like I know guys that play and you know they do pretty well, but it's nothing like here.
Super,
you know?
Saturated market because there's a couple of them and they have
all the gigs.
Right.
It's like here, like I played 5 gigs on 3 days last weekend. That would be so rare in Halifax.
Right.
So I'm like,
I mean, it's just a smaller place, right?
It's a smaller economy, smaller place. Here the economy is so huge. There's a lot of opportunities, and it's just like, you know, I didn't know that it was possible to make a living playing music when I graduated from UNT, and I just was like, I'm gonna do it, try my best anyways, and see what happens. But I didn't even know it was a thing that you could do, you know. And then once I started gigging, I was like, holy shit, I'm actually making a living right now. This is amazing. And same with the college job, I didn't know that like that was a thing that you could. That, I mean, I knew that it was a thing, but I didn't really realize that how like possible that was. And all of a sudden, oh well, I have a teaching gig, like a college job.
Yeah, he's like a professor.
All right, that's my students call me Professor Holt.
No way.
I'm like, they're like, hey, Professor Holt. I'm like, what's up, man?
Nice.
Are you that like cool teacher?
No. Okay.
So what do you professorize at your professor job?
Yeah, it's TCC. So I have a couple jazz students and or a couple guitar students, and so we teach I teach jazz guitar, and I have like this semester I created a little guitar departmental, so we all meet once a week on top of the lessons, and then. I teach music appreciation, which is basically music history. So that's been really cool for me, you know, studying jazz and having to go back and, you know, study Baroque music and classical and romantic. So it's been really, really, really enjoyable for me to just do all that reading, you know, and get into that whole thing.
Yeah, I remember we were at a bar and you're like, man, Baroque music, I'm nerding.
I've been getting really into history lately, like nerding out so bad. I'm listening to this audiobook and it's the history of Western civilization from about 1700 until now. And it's so awesome. It's 45 lectures long and I'm like in the middle of it, you know.
You can't cover all that.
Yeah, right. But it's just like, I was like on a gig and I was listening to... It was the build up to World War One, sort of the politics in Europe, and I took on set break. I just put my headphones in and lit. I couldn't stop listening. It was so.
Oh my god!
But yeah, I'm a nerd though. That's what I'm
we all say. Are, yeah, right. And that's why this podcast exists, because I just want to talk to my nerd friends.
Yeah. Right. So by new beat you meant really old beat.
Old
podcast.
Beat.
Right.
Okay. So my when you're teaching, do you feel like you know what you're saying, that you're able?
Man, that's a good question. It was a challenge. Like my first semester. Like I really, you're just thrown on the fire, you know, like you don't know, they don't tell you what to do at all. Like, here's your class, here's 30 students, here's a subject, you can teach it this way or that way or not. You know, it's so open-ended. They basically gave me a textbook before Christmas break and they were like, here's the book, good luck. That was it. So, you know, I had no, you know, and I was gigging so much of the time. It was really crazy busy time. So yeah, at that point, when I think back to my first semester, I wasn't really prepared, you know, to do it, you know, in each class. And now that I've learned a lot from that, and I'm coming back with a new strategy this semester, and it's been really, really more enjoyable, you know, really diving into the material and making sure that I can have really solid lesson plans each week.
So your new strategy is for you to learn everything in depth.
Just like no, that's always been the strategy, you know. but it takes a long time, you know. I can't be a master of the Baroque era, you know, right away. So it's like. Yeah, just like how I plan my lessons, you know, and how I set up, like, I have PowerPoint presentations and all that sort of stuff.
But there had to be this moment of, like, no, I have no idea how to do this, but I'm not going to tell you that. So I'm just, I can totally do it.
Dude, all the time. But I didn't lie. You know, I never lied. Even now, students ask me a question, I'm like, well, I don't know.
So do you make connections? You're obviously a master in jazz. So do you make connections in your jazz knowledge to your... What?
Yeah,
I don't know if they call you a master in jazz.
No,
you get a
I'm definitely not a master in jazz. Definitely not.
I'm gonna call you a master in jazz. You worked hard.
Someone said that, but it wasn't me. No. So like just learning about the multi movement cycle in the classical era, like the song forms, they were so common and everyone knew them, the audience and the musicians. So when they were writing, say, like a rondo or, you know, a sonata allegro form, they were playing with the expectations of the listeners, and I really think that's really interesting. And one of my goals is to write some music, you know, obviously jazz music that uses those formal ideas, you know, that can be malleable, and I want to build on that.
So you take, you know, like the exposition, and then a development section, and then a recap.
Just as a concept, like it wouldn't sound like classical music, but having just as a basis to
the
write
template,
something new,
and then you make that's I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So talking about, were you done?
I was just gonna say that would be a neat educational tool too.
Right.
To connect, yeah, like with your students, say, here's a song I wrote, we're gonna analyze it, and I wrote it, so it's new.
Right. Yeah. And you have to buy it off iTunes.
That's right.
Make your own textbooks. Can you do that?
Like the exercise is only a preview, like the iTunes preview. Like you have to buy it to listen to the rest of it.
Oh man, that's so bad.
Yes, you're just promoting your own brand and teaching.
But what's been most, not maybe not influential, but like, is the biographies of these great composers. Like you think about Haydn and Mozart, you know, like Debussy, like they're just kind of big names on a pedestal that you don't really think about. It's like, oh, yeah, it's just that shit, whatever it is, you know. But when you really like study the biographies of these people, they were some badass dudes, you know, and that's inspiring. You know, the life of Haydn, like nothing was easy for him. It was a grind from day one. He struggled in poverty and worked his way up to the best gig he could get and became, you know, huge. That's inspiring. Before the Romantic era, the composers before that, it was like their job, you know, and they would do it like a job. In the Romantic era, this idea of like,
like the composer genius, you know, who's, you know, writing his emotions on the page, and it's just like a reflection of his inner self. Like that's like a, like, you know, a late, like 1800s idea came up then. Before that, it wasn't like that. It was like, this is my job, like, right? You know?
Yeah, and right. I think the system, I mean, would be great if it was still in place now. There's a lot of patronage happening.
Right.
You get
right.
hired by a church or. You know,
and it's like that now, except they don't pay you as much.
I know. I feel like we're going in that direction though with Patreon,
right? Patreon, different. Yeah.
I mean, the internet is Cause amazing for musicians,
right? And that's a way to get out of like advertising. Advertising is shit on the internet. You uh-huh. hate, we all hate that. So if you have patrons, you don't need to put up ads.
Yeah,
and it's great. You can, you know, monetize eyeballs. You know, there may be like 100 people who really, really love your song, and they all give you $1.
Oh,
$100.
Yeah, right, right.
It's so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you can have demographics across the world.
Yeah, so okay, talking about this, you first teaching made me think of a question. So, I kind of call it the Ghostbuster ideology.
Here you go.
Wait, what?
Which is when somebody, there's a line in Ghostbusters that says, when somebody asks you if you're a god, you say yes. Yeah. I mean, they just, you know, they said that because they almost got blown off of a building or whatever, because somebody said, are you a god? And they said, well, no. And they almost got killed. But so I think about that when you had to go teach. It was just like, hey, can you teach this class? There's not really any parameters. And you're like, sure.
Yeah.
You know? So what's a time for each of you where you feel like you felt like you were totally in over your head, and you just did it anyway?
Oh man, dude, that last year, every day, man, like with everything that I was doing, it was like, really? When I graduated, it was like dire need. You got to make a living. So it's like, I just said yes to every single thing that came along my way. And it like every day, you know, it was like over my head.
Interject. This is, I was thinking about this the other day. We met for breakfast and you were kind of outlining your plan of saying yes to every gig. Do you
when
remember
was that?
That? It was, must have been like a year and a half ago.
Was
we
it
went
in
the
summer?
7 Mile?
Yeah, yeah. It was
yeah.
And early summer 2016.
Yeah. And I was just thinking back to this because you were telling me, I'm gonna say yes to every gig, make as many connections as I can, and play as much as I can.
Yeah.
And then you did it.
Yeah, big time.
And
yeah.
I was kind of excited because I remember that conversation really vividly.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a great conversation, and you were super inspired, and you had a plan, and now, like, a year and a half later.
Well, when I graduated, you know, I guess it was January, February, I went to Jupiter House, and I sat down. They were closing. They let me in anyways. They closed, but they let me in anyways for some reason. I had a poutine.
Yeah.
And I made
a Jupiter House?
Or, sorry, no.
Loophole.
not Loophole. It was
the donut?
Cultivar.
Oh.
Yeah, the only other place that sells poutine
right.
in America.
See, he's a Canadian.
And anyway, so I made a plan, and like, you know, like I didn't feel like I was set up when I graduated to you know, I wasn't really confident in my abilities, but I had to do something, you know. So I set a plan of like, you know, what I want to do. I got to get a cover man, got to get a church gig, you know. I want to do this and that, and do some teaching and this, some teaching in college, by the end of the year, I did every single thing that I said I was going to do. And it was like, man, that's insane. I wasn't expecting that to happen. It was just like small things, you know, like teaching an academy, teaching in a college, like play in a cover band, play a church, you know, do some country, do this, you know. And it's like, I did it all.
How many gigs did you play last year?
I don't know. It was a lot.
I think you counted.
The last 4 months.
Oh, 4 months.
I did, was it four, like 200 gigs? No. It was a lot. It was like 90 gigs in 4 months, I think. It was like, it was some huge amount, you know. Man. I was like, it worked like a lot, you know.
It was almost too much. I was like your silent cheerleader. I don't know why. That just really stood out to me. You made a plan.
Yeah.
And I went home that day and I like wrote down, and I was like, Ben Holt is going to do these things.
Right.
So I can be another like soul in the universe cheering you on.
You know, but it was so insane. You know, by October of that year, like I was playing so much, like, you know, 25 of 30 days, you know, in a month. And that was through the end of the year. So now this year it's trying to find a way to, and I was doing that when I was teaching the class for the first time too, you know, into the next year. And it was like so crazy. So now I'm trying to find a way to, you know, have time to practice, you know, want to practice.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say there's two sides to that,
right?
Because you can't have time to do the things that you want to do if music is always work and somebody else's work.
Or even just to properly prepare. You know, I was down, I saw Mark Lethierry play at the Regal Room a few months ago, and I went with Jared Sachs and Mike Tuck was down there. We ended up hanging out with Mark Lethierry and those guys and JT. After the show, we were just hanging out, and I sort of mentioned, it's like, yeah, I play like, you know, like five nights a week or whatever, you know. And he was like, holy shit, like, so you don't have time to practice for anything. And he's right, you know. And that's sort of, I want to do, the next level will be to do really well on each thing, be really well prepared, and also do more original stuff and just be able to practice more, you know, day to day.
Yeah.
So what about you, Lee? What's a situation where you were
along with the dancer,
totally in, felt totally in over your head, but you were like, you just said, yeah, I can do that. Even though you felt on the inside, I have no idea how to do this.
Every day in America?
landing in America. You have to drive the car.
Did
you know?
Move to a different country?
Well, no, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that driving was so so terrible. Yeah. I mean, driving was like so hard here because I didn't think about it because, you know, the language is totally different. And
oh, like stop?
Oh, we don't have, you know, we don't have stop sign in Taiwan, and we can't turn right in the red line. So there's some like rules are different.
Those left turns are hard, man.
Yeah, but when I first got here, I was like have the live audition here, and I rent a car, and I was like so happy I can do everything by myself, you know, and then I just get into the in this car and driving, and ask people around. I say like, hey, where can I get food? And they say, oh, there's a square. And then in my mind, I don't have, you know, a clue of what a square is.
Yeah, like there's a circle too.
I thought it's like a box. Right, what does that mean? Or it's like a restaurant. A square.
Go to the square.
Yeah, and I can never be there because I don't know how to turn the left, make the left turn. So
yeah, oh,
that's
great.
But man, that's so ballsy though. Like just like flying in their country and getting a car. It's like, so you know, and the I-35 is crazy for even now.
Yeah. For people who live here, yeah, can't handle really crazy. It.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't know how I made it that I drove myself to the airport at the last day of my audition, and yeah, I drove on the I-35.
Think about how much stronger your brain is though. Like when you're an infant. You know how they talk about how much you're constantly, you're like a little baby sponge and everything you see is new. And so then we all grow up and, you know, we live in Texas.
We lose that experience.
Become fat and like we just take everything for granted.
Whataburger.
Thanks, Whataburger. I hope we don't get called out for shitting on them.
but then, libel suit.
I mean, because, and then when you travel, like I love to travel and you kind of are suspended in this like feeling like everything is new. I have to be aware of what's around me and the language is new. But then when you make the extra step to live somewhere, that's your new normal. So, you've had to adapt to a lot of things and then also learn in addition at school. And, dude.
It's crazy.
Props.
Yeah,
that's wild.
Man, it's, like, Lee is, like, so, you know, she's kind of short and, like, very unassuming, you know. But, like, I know her really well. And, man, like, that is crazy to me. Just to be able to come in, like, the stories that she told me about every moment, you know, being just living here is just so crazy.
I think the language thing is, like, really a thing. Because I thought my English is not that bad when I was in Taiwan. You know, I can do the test right. I can get
the TOEFL.
Good grades. But I didn't know that, you know, like talking and hearing is like a thing. And I
I didn't know that either.
Well, nobody speaks like you learn in a language class or on
a
test.
No. Right. And I freaked out in the first day of our orientation in the jazz studies.
That's so crazy.
It's just like every professor they got to talk to, like, you know, introduce themselves and then like to just like say something to the new students, and I cannot understand all of them. I was like, why do you guys like talk like two times faster than it should be?
Slow down.
Yeah. It's like what I was like trying to, you know process all the information in my brain for the, you know, probably like Dr. Murphy. And then Rosanna is starting talking, and I was like, okay. So I was like trying to know, like, you know, what I should do and trying to like make some notes probably. But I just can't, and I just sit there.
Yeah, it's an extra layer, the language and the content.
Right.
I can compliment you for being fearless. I remember you were at our house when we still lived in Lowood Street, and we were eating soup.
That was a while ago.
It was a long time ago. And do you remember that? Where did you block it out?
Their old house. What were we doing there?
We were just having dinner, and I had cooked soup.
Oh, soup, yeah.
Yeah,
it was in the winter?
Yeah, yeah. Well, must have been a poor excuse for a winter, but yeah. And Lee, I remember you would, anytime you didn't understand something, you would ask a question about it. You'd be like, what was that? What does that mean? And instead of just sitting back and like, well, I have no idea what's going on, you always like proactive. Interject and you're like consuming more information. Yeah. I think that's why you learn so fast.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
a great yeah. way to be. It's inspiring.
Impromptu.
To explain it to you guys, I asked on Facebook for people to write lyrics for us.
Oh, that's what that was.
Yeah. You saw that. I saw it. What is this nonsense? So people submitted like...
That is unfollow.
Elise, why are you always putting weird things on the internet? So what we're going to do is we're going to draw one of these submissions from somebody, and then we're going to come up with a song on the spot.
Nice.
So who would like to do the honors? And then read the name on the back, because that's who submitted it.
Oh, you put the names on it?
Yeah. Because it's fun if somebody...
John Murphy.
Like,
wow,
yours.
This is so long.
Casey?
Oh,
no.
Who's Casey?
Long. This
well, there were a couple Casey's that submitted. We already did one Casey's.
Am I going to read this now?
Yeah, so read the lyrics and then let's do a song. Come here, dog.
If your plan is to love me with your mechanical hands and your man-made heart, don't be alarmed if I'm hard clay to mold. The starving by choice are who set the standards for... What is this?
Stencils?
Stencils of paper dolls. I always Ooh. Fall short of... cardboard.
All right, you ready? What's your what? Give me your tonic.
Mm.
Okay, so we go. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
If your plan is to love me with your mechanical hands, with your manly heart, don't be alarmed. I'm hard clay to mold.
Hard to mold.
The starving by choice are who set the standards for stencil of paper dolls. I'll always fall short of I'm cardboard for you to fold. So hear me for me. Won't you console me? I'll lay my skin at your feet. Need me, breathe me. Won't you please me? I've lost my sadness and far from the core of my heart. So I might as well choose the dark oven everything.
Who is this Casey? So anyways, who is Casey?
I didn't know if we were going to a chorus in the middle. Sorry.
Yeah, me and Letty dropped out the beatbox in the middle. So
really messed it up. Nice.
Okay. So what's the best thing that you've learned outside of school? Both of you. Even though you're still in school, the things that you haven't learned in school that, I don't know, maybe you wish you would have for before school or just what's a valuable thing that you've learned along the way that you kind of had to figure out for yourself?
Lame?
Is it lame?
Figure out by yourself.
Well, I get that one. So an obvious one is in jazz school, from my experience, is a mentality of like, oh yeah, I know the changes. Like, you know, I can play it, you know, because I know the changes. But that's just completely wrong. And you know, outside of school, when you're getting in different situations, like, it doesn't matter if it's 1/4/5 country tune. If you can't play like country in the style that they want, it's going to sound bad, you know, or you're going to get fired. You know, that's the same with every style and every gig. It's like the real world that requires another level of preparedness that you don't learn about in jazz school. You know, that's the biggest thing that I learned.
I think I'm from an opposite way of learning things, because I gig in first before I go to the music school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my observation is like I saw something like really weird that would never happen in like a professional setting, but I face that kind of problems here when I'm like, you know.
What's that?
Just like, I think musicianship, you know, and some of the like music school, the students from music school, I don't know where they get those kind of ego and arrogance of, you know, when they were facing music. Sometimes they were just like not like even practice, even like I send out charts beforehand before the rehearsal, and they feel like, you know, I'm too good to practice. I feel like I'm lame if I practice, if I prepared.
Right.
So they just show up and without any, like, you know, even not listening to the music before our rehearsal. And and then I just like, I, you know, I just like, because they are all my friends, and I didn't really say anything about it. But, you know, I just feel like the attitude is kind of weird, you know, because...
That's just like what I was saying. That mentality, it's really common in music school. And I've been there a million times, you know. And when I graduated, I learned the lesson that, you can't really do that anymore.
Can you compare it to schools in different parts of the world? Do you think it's an American attribute?
Well, you wouldn't...
I didn't go to music school in Taiwan, so I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But... Yeah, I think it's weird to, you know, just show up and show, even, you know, some musician, they would like give back the charts to me and say, you know what, I don't need this, you know, before a gig. And then I was, what? And then he'll say, yeah, I won't practice before the gig, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just like, no, keep that, you know, you want it.
Please trust me.
Even if you're not going to practice it, like, you know, it's taking the responsibility to look after the charts your own by yourself for 3 days before the gig, like, taking care of it, showing up to the gig with the charts. You know,
I thought it's like you're, you know, if you got hired to a gig and it's your job to, you know, just like bring the charts to the gig,
right? And you want to work with somebody who's gonna
do that,
make you feel like their music matters, and
even
you're gonna
like
invest
even
in it.
You don't prepare for that, even you don't practice, then I don't want to know anything about it. I just, the gig sounds great, that's all I care about.
That is pretty cocky to say, like, oh, I don't need these, I won't be practicing.
Right, like you said, though, like, you don't want to know about it. I mean, it is, I think, if you're getting someone to play with you, it's their responsibility to kind of say, okay, I'm gonna make this person as comfortable as possible. Me telling them I'm not going to practice serves no purpose.
Right. Yeah, if you're not going to practice, but you still smoke the gig, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But don't say it.
Right.
Question. So, Ben, you kind of come from a small town, right?
Yes, kind
of. Kind of? Is it not a small town or no?
Well, Halifax, you know, I'm from the suburbs of Halifax. Halifax is 300,000.
Okay.
You know, but you know, I studied in Antigonish, which is 8,000.
Antigonish? Antigonish.
Antigonish?
Antigonish. What about you, Lee? What's the...
Oh, man, Taipei, man.
Oh, you come from the city?
No, I'm from like a rural area. I'm from Taoyuan. And it's like, I'm from a rural area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm curious about weird small town stories.
Canadian small towns.
Yeah, because I have weird, my town's not, that I'm from, isn't super small, but the music community is pretty small. And I got some awesome stories because of that, I think.
Can you tell us a story?
And then, for example, my last semester, I went to school a couple years in Augusta for music before I came to school for music out here in Texas. And my last year there, my last semester was actually really cool. They had what they called Lyceum series. It was a different topic every time they have this. It's every spring and they have a different topic. And the topic... Like the first year I was there was like medical professionals or something. But the topic the last year I was there was jazz. So they taught a jazz history course, which they never did before. I mean, I was one of four percussionists in the school. You know, it was really small. And they had taught a jazz improv class. And they had a guest artist come kind of along the lines, like it would follow along. They try to make it representative of each stage of jazz history, basically.
Right.
But we had some great artists that came out there. Jay Sennett came out there, and Michelle Roseman, and just a lot of people that were great. And one of the performers that came out there was the Jazz at Lincoln Center Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. Okay. Right. And I'd seen this basically the same group led by Arturo O'Farrell in New York before that. And so I was super excited because they're killing, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a big band. I mean, it's not a big band like as in swing, but it's a large Latin group. And separately, there was this guy in town that studied with the same guy that I did. And this guy played congas. And he was the only guy trying to learn how to do congas for real, basically, in town. He had this nice set of Giovanni congas, and he was just really working on it. And he got really excited about this music, and he talked to the jazz professor at our school, the only guy that would teach jazz if asked, but there wasn't any, like, there was a jazz band, but that was it.
Right.
And
sounds like TCC.
Right. And he talked to this guy, and at the time, this was like maybe 2006 or 7, we couldn't go to Cuba, and he was going to go to Cuba, but you needed a professor to sponsor you. So mm-hmm. this guy at our school was going to sponsor him, right? So he was getting super into it. Well, when the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra came, whatever happened, somebody didn't read the writer, and the conga player for that group said, okay, provide the congas, but they can't be what he called patio drums, so like fiberglass drums.
Right.
Which is the only thing the school had. And the only person that had nice congas was this guy that was learning congas. And he ended up playing at the school with us and everything. And so they asked him, like, the day of. Said, hey, man, sorry, this didn't happen. We didn't realize this before now. Can we please borrow your congas? I mean, they're getting on the plane coming here right now. And he was so mad. This guy was so mad that they would dare ask him something like this.
Is it a professor?
This is, let's call him Fred. Fred was learning congas.
Oh, a student.
Yeah, the student. He's an older guy. He was an older guy at the time. And I guess already in his career and was just really interested in congas. And Fred had talked to the professor and he was going to go to Cuba. And then the professor called Fred, said, hey, we didn't read the writer. Can we please borrow your congas? And he was like, how dare you even ask me? Because some conga players pee on their hands.
Come
on. Oh, my God. All
right. For anybody who does not know anything about music, instruments, or famous people, the metaphor I would say is like Steve Jobs is coming to do a conference in your city. And he's like, oh, my bag didn't show up. Don't have my computer. Can I borrow your computer? And you're like, no. Because some people pick their nose. He can't have my computer.
Right. I mean,
what the?
It was the weirdest thing. This That's guy, up, Fred, man. Calls me, not his real name, by the way. Fred calls me super mad, worked up. I'm partly responsible now for making this performance happen, going well. And I can't believe he even asked me.
Oh, man.
And so, and
what
I'm
did
like,
you say?
I'm like, I don't know if it's that big of a deal, man. I don't know. I mean, yeah, okay, maybe you feel like you're put in a bad spot. The peeing in the hands thing, I don't, like, no, that's a thing that happens, but no one pees on their hands and then goes play.
It's kind of clean. It's pretty sterile. It's good for your feet.
No one pees on their hands and plays the congas. That's not the point. You know what I mean? Like, they don't do that. So they do it afterwards for
calluses.
To build up your calluses, right? And you might be doing it in the shower or something. You know what I mean? And it's old school stuff, and it doesn't happen so often anymore. And,
wow.
But there was no one really there to say, hey, I know more than you. This is weird.
You're an idiot.
Let him borrow your congas. Because we had such a small music community.
You should be honest.
He was the, like, there was not much of a backdrop for him to go, for somebody to go, hey,
right,
this is weird.
Right.
By the way, that concert was awesome. The group.
And he let him use the congas.
No, he never let him use the congas.
Oh my God.
Matter of fact, okay, so here's, I'll tell you the timeline. That happened. He calls me freaking out. Didn't let him use the congas. The group came down to Augusta, but there was all kinds of bad weather, so they were late, and they had different things on different planes. So they came out and played the show in plain clothes and didn't have any charts. So our professor was printing out these charts in the minutes before the gig and while the gig was supposed to be going on. And what would happen is the leader came out and played piano, solo piano, jeans and a t-shirt, And then a couple people would join them, and then a couple more people would join them, and pretty soon the conga player comes out carrying the crappy fiberglass congas that we have.
Wow.
And but it was killing, and it was really personal, you know, because it was just you know, we're going to do what we can. And then the next day, Fred had gone to the administration and wanted a verbal, formal, and written apology.
Ooh.
From the guy.
Get it, you should have burned those congas, man.
I know. Well, so we didn't hear from Fred anymore. They were like, dude, just don't come back.
You should have peed on the congas.
And he, so no trip to Cuba for him. So, you know what I mean? He didn't get to play with us anymore. It was a weird thing. So yeah, stories like that. Like,
I can't beat that one.
You know what I mean?
that's
Wow. I mean, what? I'm a little bit curious. Is my hometown this like island of weirdness?
No, I think
yes, Augusta is an island.
No,
of weirdness.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, I definitely can relate to that in some ways. The schools that I went to, they were so small and people were so dumb, but they did make a good effort to bring in people from other places to come and, you know, create the culture. Like you went, Santa Fe had a kind of program where they would bring guys from New York, and it was pretty cool. Like, we saw lots of people. But I remember one scene though, when I was in community college in Halifax, when I was like, I'm in jazz school now. Like, I'm in, you know, it's my mentality. It was not a jazz school, but it was like, yeah, we're doing this thing. And I was out partying with these people. We were going to see a jazz concert in Halifax, and we were driving. And I remember talking about Miles Davis. I mentioned Miles Davis, and I thought I was like all hip, you know, back when I was 19. And then one of the girls in the car, she was a vocalist. She goes, Miles Davis, is he the guy who sings, Miles Davis? I'll never forget that. You know, I didn't know much about anything at the time, but at least I knew who Miles Davis was. And she was like, I was like, these are my colleagues here. I'll never forget that one. But it doesn't beat the conga story, but just one.
Like, I've had my fair share of moments. I'm sure anybody listening to this who knows me is like, okay, yeah. But remember that one time? For example, I was in Northern Ireland, and I think I was 15, and I was talking to some friends, and we were hanging out, and they were talking about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I was, you know, kind of, when you're figuring stuff out as a teenager, you're like, yeah, yeah, oh, right. With that completely blank look on your face that people, like, can pounce on.
Like, and I totally know what you're talking about. Like, oh, I don't really, but I'm going to wait for context.
Fresh Prince is also, you know, princesses. And so I was, like, looking like that, and one's like, Do you know what we're talking about? And I was like, yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like the band. And
oh man.
And that was one of my defining moments.
Yes. When was that?
When I was 15 and I was in Northern Ireland with a bunch of other Americans.
Oh yeah.
And they were like, well, sing the Fresh Prince theme song. And
Sorry, no, I have the ultimate story once you're
do
done.
Do it. Just, no, that was my, no, okay. I'm just being self-deprecating.
Okay, I have the story. So we were in our last year at Santa Fe, you know, and we I feel so bad for cutting you off.
No, that was
this is great. That's how it goes. Okay. Inspiration.
So no, so but I can't believe I didn't remember this. So we were in Santa Fe, you know, middle of nowhere, Nova Scotia, in the jazz program. But we had to put together this band in our final year. We wanted to do an R&B band, you know, just some guys got together, and we had like, you know, a 4-piece horn section. Peter Rio had his B3 and his Leslie speaker, you know, and he was playing really great on the organ. And we had a really, really good band of like the best people in this school, you know. I don't want to sound pretentious, but like it was like the best people around there at the time. They all played really, really well, and we were playing Tower of Power. We played the Fresh Prince theme song. That was why I remember it. We played like Tower of Power, James Brown, like, all these good. We had a great, like, you know, 3 sets worth of music, and for us, you know, with limited experience being where we are, we had a really good band. And, you know, being the way Peter plays, it was like he was playing really well, and we put together all this music, and we had a gig at the Truro Agricultural College. That's like an hour drive from Saint FX in the middle of nowhere. And you know, one of the guys that was sitting there used to go to the jazz program. He got us this gig. It's a Christmas gig, and we were playing. And fuck, man, we were sounding really good at that time. We played a set, and it went really well. And we had about 20 people up dancing, and it was, you know, kind of a smaller thing. Then as soon as we played the last beat of the last song, they started putting on Toby Keith, and the dance floor flooded. What? It flooded with 200 yes. people flooded the dance floor, and they had these Christmas sweaters, cowboy hats. This is a country town, you know. This is like Truro, agricultural college. They're all hicks, you know. They had their cowboy hats on, and they're like dancing to Tequila and Toby Keith, and it's like brutal, stupid hip hop, and then like some like, you know, pop country, and then basically they said, yeah, we don't want you to play again. Oh my god! Like, they didn't like the Tower of Power, you know. So
yeah, we played a Christmas party last year too. You were on that gig.
No, but yeah. So the same deal as that, but yeah. It gets worse. The story gets worse. So they figured, okay, we're still gonna pay you, but we want you to leave. Well, so okay, we'll let you play a short little set, and then that's the end. So the sound guy basically said you gotta go. So we played like three songs, and then we played it, and they're like, you suck. they heckled us so badly, and then when we were packing up our shit to leave, like all dejected, there's a fucking violent snowball fight with all these hick motherfuckers outside.
Wait,
and they're throwing snowballs at us and everywhere, and it was totally crazy. We just drove back to jazz school thinking like,
that's,
well,
not real.
So that's the real world out there, you know.
You got what? Snowball heckled
of like a violent snowball fight.
Yeah, it was just like a bunch of hicks. Like,
so was the snowball fight moving indoors, or was it all?
No, it was all outside. Okay. But everyone that left the stage, and we started playing, and they went back outside, and there's like 200 people throwing snowballs at each other and at us, and just like total like mayhem. You know, we just put our stuff in the gear. And we're like, man, I guess we'll go back to playing Kenny Warner tunes or Kenny Wheeler tunes.
It's the second Canadian amendment, the right to bear balls, snowballs.
Yes, yeah, that's right. So that was my hick story. They had no appreciation for what we were playing. And, you know, we did all right. Like, and actually the singer for that band, you know, we had two female singers and one male singer, and he now sings for Duende in New York and Caden. So like two of the best vocal jazz groups, you know, in Toronto and in New York. And, you know, like he just played, you know, like the, what is it, Massey Hall in Toronto. Like, you know, he played with, sang with Bobby McFerrin, you know. That's, he's great. Totally famous now. But they didn't like us, man. We didn't play enough tequila for them.
Wow. Yeah. That happens all the time. I had an experience with, I think it was one of my first years at UNT. And this guy came, he was kind of shopping musicians at UNT, but he was in the community, like people knew about him. But he was putting together a traditional Mexican banda.
Right.
Oh.
Like mariachi?
No. Not mariachi, but I am going to sound really ignorant because I don't know much about that music, but it's that style banda music. And so he's coming to shop for kids at UNT, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to pay you. We're going to play quinceañeras, and I'll give you the charts, and it'll be great. And
sounds
so
killing.
We're like, these adorable children, like, oh, yeah, I got a paying gig. And so then he's like, Elise, I need you to listen to this music and chart it out, and I'll pay you extra. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to chart it out, like, you know, as we would expect. And he just hands me a stack of, like, there's a staff with a melody on it. And then he's like, that's all I want. That's all I want. And just give that to the band. And I was like, okay, cool. And is everyone going to know the style of this song? And he's like, yeah, they'll know. And none of us do. And so
this is all UNT
students? Yeah, oh, yeah. UNT students. Yeah. And so we go to our first quinceañera and are the only white people there and do not know what's going on and get up on stage and they start requesting songs. And we don't know the tradition at all. And we can't play the music that they're asking for. And so it starts to get, you know, really intense. The guy whose daughter quinceañera it is comes and talks to the manager, and he's like, hey, we need to go talk outside. And he's like, Elise, come here, because I was kind of helping to organize it. And they were mad and they were yelling at him in Spanish, and it started to get really physical and violent outside this gig. And so I'm like, okay, cool, you know what, like, we'll leave, it's okay. You know, get a DJ, that'll probably be your best bet. And so he's like, you have to, and the manager's like, we have to finish this gig, you're paying us, I'm going to pay my musicians. And so they were going at it, and they started pushing each other.
Wait. Oh, okay. We're getting to the physical and violent part.
Yeah. And I was like, is this the negotiation process? Are we good here?
Can I make a side note real quick?
Yeah.
Elise is from Minnesota.
Oh, no.
And in her hometown, the biggest thing that made the news in the last 2 years was a brawl that broke out at her old high school. The brawl made the local news. They had school assemblies about it. It was a big deal. And what took place in the brawl was, at a basketball game, a player went to another player, pushed him back. That was the entire brawl. So that constitutes
you never know when somebody might get pushed.
Very physical and violent. And it sounds like we're talking about the same scenario.
All right. Who knows? I was fresh off the boat. So this is my first year in Texas.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You hear that there are guns in Texas. So,
did you get paid for that gig?
We got paid a quarter of what we were going to get paid. And
I understand it was because you negotiated that, right?
Yeah. And I was like, all right, well, we have contracts.
I just turn off.
And, you want to go press it?
Okay. Continue your story.
Yeah, so we're out there and the manager's kind of translating for me. And I don't know why I have been bequeathed the negotiation role.
That's a natural role for you. You have the leadership gene.
So, yeah. So I negotiated they're going to pay us if we left immediately. So we went back in. Everyone was mad.
That was kind of the deal that we had. That we're going to pay you, but you got to go.
Yeah, right now. And everyone was mad.
I love that. I haven't had that experience
just,
yet. Like
tails between your legs, walk out.
I'm still like, I might have just.
You skipped that stage, I think.
Skipped that stage, yeah. But I'm ready to be chased out of a bar.
He made us wear. We wore those embroidered vests. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Why would he?
Yeah.
But you know what? This could go back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like. Like, you think, like, oh, this person's educated in music, and they go to jazz school, they can be able to do this thing. But it's like, man, if you don't know the style, you can't do it. You know, it's like...
Right. I mean,
in jazz school, you're learning a style of music. But, yeah. Like, country or whatever that was, you know, it's different. A different
I know,
style,
I feel really
know?
Bad, too, because I can't even educatedly talk about it, you know? But
more educatedly.
Educatedly.
Educatedly-erist.
I think that's overall the point of... going to college or education in general, you have to rub shoulders with a lot of different people. Otherwise, we're all going to be our own idiots in our own little bubble.
That's the best part about it, right there. Yeah, UNT is amazing for that.
UNT,
there's so many international
program,
students.
Sure.
Yeah, the music program. Like, but first, you guys were my only American friends for a long time.
Yeah,
all my friends are from, you know, Colombia, Spain, like Sweden, like all these different places. And it's amazing. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, I definitely knew less people from Texas when I first moved here than I did people from all other states.
Right, right.
And countries.
And it's so funny because, like, like the area you're in is kind of like anti-culture. Like, there's the Whataburgers and the, you know, Sonics are just everywhere. But, like, in the school and in the community, there's so many great, great people. You know, I was really turned off by...
Because Texas in general sucks.
Wait. By the Texas... I was really turned off by the sort of Texas culture, you know, the corporate, like, you know, like all the advertisements and just like all, really, really... But the people are so awesome around here. There's so many cool people.
So you were kind of turned off by the what? The, like...
Well, just like the fact that there's a fast food joint on every corner and like just that kind of thing, you know?
Oh, I don't know if that's Texan as much as
America.
Yeah.
Because what's weird about for me is that I can't... Like, I'm in Denton, you know? I shouldn't feel this way, but I feel trapped almost. I can't just, like, escape and just go to the middle of nowhere. Or back home, like, back home, I can just, like, walk for 5 minutes and be just completely in the middle of nowhere. And
yeah,
I love that.
I miss that, too. Because where I grew up in Minnesota, there's, like, a state park within 5 miles of residence.
See,
so I'd walk, you know, down the street, around the corner, and I was in this beautiful marsh where I would walk.
Right.
And here... It's not so, there's it's a different kind of country. There's like ranch.
Right.
Denton has.
Well, I feel like I have that fantasy, you know, maybe I have a Monday morning and I get some time off. I'm going to like go walk and just sit somewhere, you know, and then I start walking and then I get to the University Avenue, or if I go the other way, I get to I-35. You know, I can't escape. Like.
Right. Okay, so you're getting into like music history and stuff. So, if you were writing the chapter on the last 5 years of music,
Man, I'm not. I don't know if I'm aware enough for that.
This is like, what would you put on?
Wow.
What would you put on a rocket that we send to space that has?
So who's like playing right now? Like, what's good right now for?
Yeah.
I mean, just it can also be what you're interested in.
Yeah, I guess the smaller question is, what you listening to?
Okay. Yeah. Let's deal with more with that. Yeah. I don't know.
I feel ashamed because since I got to the music school, I don't really listen to music as I do like the. Music, the meaning of music to me was like escaping from my daily life, and now it becomes my responsibility and my duty. So it's the feeling of like listening to music, it's really different. And I remember like when I was in Taiwan, I always just like open this, you know, Spotify and trying to find any kind of new music to me. But now I don't really do that anymore. I only probably just in school. I hope that, you know, things will change after I graduate from UNT.
And do you find songwriting to be an exploration of music, being able to enjoy it?
You mean now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also enjoy, you know, doing the research. But, you know, that's like, before I'm just like listening broadly, just listen whatever. But now, like, I'm listening for like a reason. Like, yeah, I'm doing analysis.
Music school definitely has that effect.
You know, I think in a way that that's okay. I mean, on a long enough timeline, I think it's kind of a time and place for everything. You know, I think we'll all be better for having to have that listening duty during music school. And then, because I think we all felt this. I think that's a common sentiment, is to feel kind of like, man, I'm not listening to music the way I used to. I want to. That's not
right.
I'm not doing the same thing. And then I think, oh, well, maybe I don't have to right now.
Right now.
Ultimately, I will. But maybe this is just the time right now where I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember a time listening to music where it's like pure like ecstasy. Like, you listen to, wow, this is amazing. Like, yeah, just like getting into it. And like, you know, like me and my friends get together and we would just put on like a Pink Floyd album and just like totally trip out. You know, that's back when we were kids. Nice. But now, you know, do you guys ever have this experience? Now, sometimes I'll listen to music and I'll be like listening along. I'll be like, wow, that's cool. Like, I should transcribe that. Mm-hmm. I should transcribe that.
Yeah,
I should transcribe that. I should put it off. It's
there
too
has
much.
To be a,
you know,
purpose.
Off, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Do you remember the first like album or CD you bought and listened to, like with your own money?
When I was like 12, my mom just brought me and my brother all the time to the CD store, and we just grab all like everything that we want, and it's always Chinese pop.
Nice.
And I remember we have the store have like a green label and a red label, and you have to combine them two and then to get like a special price. So I think I got
it's a nifty trick.
Yeah, the red label is like, you know, the hit albums, and it's always like, you know, Chinese pop, like Jay Chou.
Is Chinese pop good?
Well, some of them are very good, like Jay Chou.
Right.
Yeah, and the green label is always like, you know, world music, you know, sometimes like maybe like, you know, jazz would be.
Actually, Lee's been showing me some Taiwanese folk like pop type stuff lately, and it's really good. Like
Crowd
Lu.
Crowd Lu. Lu Guangzhong.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah.
What is it in Chinese?
Lu Guangzhong. He's like one of my favorite singer.
Yeah, he's good.
I was like Crowd so Lu. Crazy about him since I like in the college. And I got this opportunity because my friend is now working in his company. So while I'm here in America, and then he just released his newest album, and then I just told my friend like, oh, you know what, I really like him, and I'm so glad that you're working in his company now. I'm so happy about for you. And then he just said, oh really, so do you want a new album? So yeah, hell, you know, hell yeah.
Yeah,
I just like, you want to send it to me or like well,
so he mailed the record.
Yeah, he mailed the record and with his Crowd Lu's signature on it.
To your name, to Lee. Yeah,
yeah.
Like, that's yes. Awesome.
Yay. Yeah, yeah. Check him out, he's cool.
Crowd Lu, check it out.
Lee, what does your practice routine look like right now?
So I think for this semester, because all right, I changed a little bit of how I practice. I used to like spend a lot of hours just practice whatever I need to for the class or like, you know, just like on mission. But now this the beginning of this semester, I heard my voice overly practicing for the auditions, and also like probably like practicing in the wrong way.
Shoot, no, you were doing a crazy Ella Fitzgerald transcription and practicing for hours on end.
Yeah, I was transcribing Ella Fitzgerald's singing on the song Round Midnight, and yeah, it's just like burning my voice. So I heard my voice and I couldn't really sing for a month, and I have to relearn and to rebuild my muscle memory for singing. So for my practice routine now, it's like all about how do I feel. Okay, so do I feel like I'm hurting myself, do I feel like painful, or do I feel swollen, and then I just stop.
Nice.
Just completely stop everything that I'm doing. And maybe I'll just do like something, you know, like writing down stuff or, you know, transcribing, but by, you know, writing the music down instead of like singing. I have to save my voice for, you know, some purpose.
Yeah.
Awareness of your vocal health. That's super important.
Yeah. Just talked to my instructor today, Rosanna Ecker. She told me like, yeah, it's a thing they call it. They have like the latest term. They call it a vocal dosing.
Dose.
It's like a medical, you know, dose.
Right.
So whenever whatever you're doing, you have to think about like, you know, how. Sometimes like they call it like how much money you're spending your night, you know, like when you're singing, you have to think, oh, what is like the situation right now? If you're like just rehearsing, then, you know, just spend a little bit, not to like spend big money.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're like, you know, Celine Dion and you have like a concert in Las Vegas and, you know, you have to spend the big money.
Right.
Yeah. But when she was like preparing for that, she would just keep silent all the time and put like, you know, inhaler, like steamer all the time, and just
that's your jam now.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I do that now.
Nice.
Yeah, because those of us who are not professional singers don't realize, you know, we talk every day, so you know what it's like if your voice goes out, but you are using it in so much more of capacity than I even know, you know.
Yeah.
The effort required.
Yeah, we talk about that too. Rosanna told me that they study some like teachers of how they use their voice, and that they found like after 17 minutes of using, you know, just talking, and then the surface of their vocal folds, the surface cells are like damaging, starting.
Wow.
So
17 minutes?
Yeah, 17 minutes. So
what?
It's a thing.
So we'll practice together, and I'll be like, Lee, let's run this lick, let's run this vocabulary, and we'll over and over again, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ting. Yes. And maybe next time we'll record from our trip to Taiwan, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. We'll Skype. We'll do it by silver Skype from Taiwan.
We just get uninvited.
Oh, no, yeah, definitely, yeah, we'll record the next one in Taiwan. We'll do New Year's in Taiwan.
Nice.
That's what I would say.
Okay, bye.